more third spaces. They're crowdsourcing information as a mutual aid project. KBOO's Lisa Loving spoke with Fern Allen, founder and director of the program.
I'm Lisa Loving. Our guest is Fern Capella Allen of the New Earth School PDX in Southeast Portland. She's crowdsourcing knowledge as a mutual aid project. And Fern, I know that there was a thing that was called the free school movement that started in the 1960s, and it was for kids. But this is for anybody. And this is something that you and your community figured out. What is this project and what made you start it?
Thank you. Yes. So that's probably true that the 1960s, the dawning of the Age of Aquarius, probably brought in the free school movement in the beginning. And then in the early 2000s, here in Portland, in our little Beirut anarchist era, we had something called free school as well. And it was completely free. And it was the early days of the internet. You're just putting a calendar on online somewhere, and people would put on a class they wanted to teach for free, and then people would go on the calendar and show up to that class for free. And so you could take any class you wanted that was available, and you could teach any class you felt like teaching. So it was a really kind of wild and cool movement that a lot of us took part in back in the day, 20 years ago or more. And then last year, I got the cosmic urge to start it up again, because I feel like right now with Pluto entering Aquarius, I think that we are now at this next phase of the Age of Aquarius, really, you know? And we are here creating something called New Earth School, actually, now. And it's called New Earth School, and it's PDX is here in Portland, because it's not completely free as it was back in the early 2000s. It is $5 a class per student, and it's free for teachers to teach and also to take classes. So if you teach a class, one class, you can get classes for free. So any teacher teaches for free and receives as many classes as they want to take for free. And if you're not teaching, it's just $5 a class. So it's basically going outside of the institutional setup of education, where you're not going through an expensive program to get a certification to then teach, and you're not going through an expensive program to learn things. So it's kind of just like removing all of that and getting people and their knowledge to people and their curiosities.
Fern, you brought up the Age of Aquarius stuff, and I don't consider myself to be a hippie, but I will say that over the past 25 years, my hippie friends that study astrology were fingers on the pulse about the current moment. And I just have to give it to them. The idea that this actually is a turning point for all humanity it's a big, complicated idea that would take an entire show, actually, sure, to really unpack that. But we're talking about the New Earth School PDX in Southeast Portland. I'm referring to it as a mutual aid project, where instead of everybody showing up with the paperwork that shows that they've got a PhD in educational studies or something like that, people who have an area of expertise show up and share it in a structured environment. So can you talk about, for people who maybe have never heard of this idea before, talk about how it works, like if you show up for a class?
Yeah, I'll give you kind of the logistics and the experience. So they're 6 weeks on, 6 weeks off. So it's per season. So we're starting this one in the beginning of spring. It's starting Tuesday, March 25th. So right as spring begins, we're coming in for 6 weeks. It's every Tuesday evening, 4 hours long. There's about 8 classes per hour. And then that's the same for each hour. So there's probably around 32 classes offered within the evening of each Tuesday night. The classes are a series, so they are not the same class over and over again. They evolve, you know, however the instructor wants to create the class. There's also kitchens, so we're having herbal tinctures and making kombucha. There's a big hall. Bridge Space is a beautiful space, but there's a giant hall with beautiful wooden floors, so there's definitely a movement section with, you know, dance and yogas and all kinds of things like that. And really, we are just collecting the $5 per class per student for the rent, because we want to make sure we're supporting Bridge Space. But other than that, we're, you know, this is just a real collaboration and contribution project. It is under, I'm wearing my shirt, Abundance is a Human Right. And it is kind of under the umbrella of something bigger, because I am starting it and investing in it myself personally to kind of get it going. And it is under this bigger kind of surplus consciousness that I have around just organizing abundance and how we just have so much and really everyone can have everything they need at a surplus even, really.
And you already mentioned it, but the Bridge space is, it's one of these places that's a community venue and it's not free, but it is created for all kinds of community events and it's big and open with big windows. And I see where people have like birthday parties on there, but they also have organizational events and special events. And I want to say it's close in Southeast, so it's centrally located.
Exactly. And I did get from Ewan. Ewan is the owner and one of the main administrators of the building. I did get from him this morning his own description of Bridge Space, because I think they're doing something pretty amazingly synchronistic to what New Earth School is about. But so they are basically creating something called Third Spaces. Bridge Space is a third space that wants to become a place that's a bridge between different communities and their needs. It's a place where people with different interests can bump into each other and develop relationships over time. And it's also, they said that we believe that third spaces and non-retail sites for fun, collaboration, and community building are important and a scarce resource in the city landscape. It fosters mutual power, helps generate collaboration and mutual competence and can-do energy. So yeah, it's basically like a place where you're not going to shop and you're not going to church, but you're going to be together, which is pretty cool.
Right. It's not your job. It's not your house. It's a place to hang out with people and learn something if you want to learn something.
And one thing is kind of exciting that we're bringing in, because we have this in-person, which I feel like is really important, this in-person collaborative mutual aid education experience. But one thing we're offering also are slots for two-hour lectures for single-day experiences for people if they don't want to commit to the whole six-week-long lesson planning. They can do a two-hour lecture and basically share their, you know, life experience or mastery in an individual lecture. And we're also offering online, because I know some people aren't even in Portland but want to be part of the New Earth School PDX experience. And so we're going to be offering that on a schedule. So we have a full schedule and we'll put all the classes that are available. So, you know, teachers again could teach on Tuesday night and then maybe take a class online for free that they are excited about, or take a lecture that they, you know, that they could go to on a Saturday, maybe, instead of necessarily just having it all within that 4-hour block. So because of Bridge Space and because of our ability to evolve here,
talk about the classes that you've already had.
I personally did a tarot class. We had a 2-hour acting class that was super fun. And then I had a business management class, kind of like an accounting class. We had another big business management, like how to create your resume and how to interact with like CEOs and interact in a corporate sense, being your best business self in business. And then there was guitar. There were multiple dance classes of all kinds of ways. There was meditation classes, yoga classes. There was a visualization class. There was a fitness class, like where someone brought in weights and taught people how to use weights and stuff like that. Fixing bikes. There was a bike fixing person who brought in bikes to fix, and you could bring in your own bike and fix it. And this year there can be so many more types of classes because we have two kitchens. So there can be all kinds of kitchen cooking classes, and like we have the herbal tincture already coming in. I do right now have like a storytelling class. Oh, last year we had a erotic poetry class that was off the chain, super fun. And they were a riot the whole time. And what's so cool about being in New Earth School in person, you know, 8 classes at a time in a building, is that you are in your class, but you can just hear all the other classes, kind of just the buzz and the rumble and the like giggles and the, you can just kind of feel that there's so much going on in this building. So many people, like so many lights turning on and so many connections being made. And then last year with the erotic poetry class, they ended up taking their whole class to an open mic and then reading their erotic poetry at an open mic together. So they like took it out of the New Earth School. And yeah, that's the thing, exactly that. It's like, it's impossible to even really predict what's to come from these kinds of connections and experiences, collaborations. You just, it's just like a go, you know, it's the go of how to get together. But this is like very intentional space where we really are creating something exciting. So I love to create that corner for the world, for our communities.
I'm going to go to the woo place. In the millennium, the last millennium, the year 2000, I had friends who were talking about the Age of Aquarius. It was a musical from 1968, which was the dawning of the Age of Aquarius. It actually really was wildly. And the idea with the Age of Aquarius, especially my friend Patrice used to tell me about it. She used to send me articles 25 years ago about this. Wow. That said, the whole world is going to start changing in 2020. You got to watch out for 2020. And I would laugh and I would go put on my reading glasses from the dollar store and giggle and la-di-da-di-da. And the idea is that this previous millennium was the Piscean age, right? If I've got it correctly. But the Age of Aquarius, it's like this was our chance. The people who care about love and light, I'm putting it like that, and not hating people. This is our chance to try to create the society that we always knew that we needed, wanted, and deserved. And if we did not take this opportunity to do that, the opportunity will go away. And I wanted, like, okay, in my official questions for you for this interview, it said, you know, what are the stakes? What's happening right now? You know, what if you never did this? And so now I'm going to hand you the invisible theoretical microphone and just say, talk about, Fern, this is a crucial moment in humanity. What's going on, in your opinion, and how does that fit in with your idea of mutual aid?
I love that. What an amazing question and an amazing preface. And I feel you, and I feel the concern and the weight of the world that a lot of people have right now. But I actually feel underneath that so much excitement. And I think if people know me, they know that that's really where I stand and where I live, is in the excitement of this place and this time. I feel that most of us chose as beings to come in to be active and engaged at this time. And I'm almost like laying golden eggs, you know, that's my job, is I'm here. And at the dawning, at the birthing, it's really like we're at the birth, we're midwives of this beautiful age. And we're kind of here like whispering these beautiful stories into the ear of this amazing baby that's coming, you know, and these stories will imprint for a long, long time. And so it's a great honor. It's an incredible honor to be of age and of, you know, loving mind and body, to be at this time, at the dawning, the birthing of the Age of Aquarius. And so I guess with that, I would say what's so important is that there is no future. There is really only right now. And it is so, especially like using the concept of the baby, you know, the baby, the future is the baby that we birth together right now, that we are in the labor of right this moment. And so we have to be really tender and precious with the future, starting with how we speak about the future and what we intend for the future, you know? So we putting a lot of, like, no matter what you see that's happening around you, putting any kind of concern or, like, you know, real, like, freaked out fear about the future kind of accelerates the fear that could potentially happen in the future. So it's really important, I think, to like, basically engage with what our plans are. Like, you know, don't worry about like what other people are doing, because there's a lot of old power. You said that we're in the switching of the ages between the Piscean age and the Aquarian age. And there's a lot of powers that were, that are definitely dying off, but like going to be, you know, grasping to the last second. And so we're going to see a lot of that at this time. And we're going to have to be strong enough to hold both in both hands, you know, and walk away from this as we're moving towards this other thing that we know in our hearts is the age of Aquarius, is the age of our own enlightenment. And one thing that I think, I'm actually, again, abundance is a human right. I'm creating this book around our original abundance, and also as we move into the age of technology, how we are going to basically, technology is bringing back in our abundant age as well. We can't really be scared of anything, even technology. We're not going to move away from AI. We're not going to move away. We're moving into new areas of existence that were intended for our greatest expression of humanity. And we can't like just quell all these terrifying fires. We're actually going to, you know, get bigger with all of this stuff. So I find only like thrilling excitement in what's coming. And I know that this is one small little, you know, dandelion seed out into the ether, like, which is New Earth School PDX. And it's part of the bigger plan. It's part of everyone's heart kind of song, you know, that we're putting out together that says the future is beautiful and you're welcome in, baby, you know, like you're welcome to be birthed. We love you and we're excited for your existence, which is the kind of the way that we will interact together is in the future. And yes, so it's New Earth School PDX. We have a spring semester coming up starting March 25th, going through April 29th. It's every single Tuesday. It's 4 hours a Tuesday from 4 to 9 p.m. There's an hour community break in the middle. And I'm looking for teachers of anything. If you anything you feel qualified to teach, we believe you and we're excited to learn from you.
That was KBOO's Lisa Loving speaking with Fern Allen of the New Earth School PDX. More information is online at newearthschoolpdx.com. More KBOO News in depth coming your way in just a moment. You are listening to KBOO News in depth. Students and professors expressing solidarity with the Palestinian cause have been having a tough time on many U.S. college campuses since the Israel-Hamas war started in October 2023. And now it looks like things may be getting worse for them. In January, for instance, President Trump signed an executive order calling for immediate action against non-citizen college students who engage in pro-Palestine protests. And there's been actions taken against students and faculty members who are citizens, too. KBOO contributor David Rosenberg spoke with Jonah Rubin, the senior manager for campus organizing for Jewish Voice for Peace, about the campus repression that's come down against those advocating for Palestinian rights, as well as those involved in other protests.
When I hear about the stuff that's going on campuses in terms of cracking down on pro-Palestinian protests, it seems almost a little nutty to me. I mean, that people wearing keffiyehs would be suspected of anti-Semitism, or that any sort of speaking out for Palestinian rights would be considered an assault on the Jewish people. Is that the impression you get?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that we are living in a time when the U.S. government has decided to target some of the most vulnerable populations as part of its attempt to implement a broad far-right agenda. And one of those vulnerable populations that it is targeting are Palestinian students and their allies in the Palestine Solidarity Movement as a way of opening up attacks on the entire movement for social justice.
But during the Biden administration, this was going on as well, right? And they weren't a far-right government. They were just extremely pro-Israel.
Yeah, that's correct. And I think this is really important, that the repression that we're seeing right now began under the Biden administration and has intensified under the Trump administration. So what we're seeing is not entirely new, but it is intensifying in worrying ways. And some of the most worrying ways are in the ways that the administration has recruited universities to do its dirty work that it's not willing to do itself.
What do you mean by that? What sort of dirty work?
So let me give you an example. The executive order that Trump signed on January 29th targeting non-citizen students who engaged in pro-Palestine activism got a lot of coverage, rightly so, for its threats to students who engage in political organizing. But it didn't actually grant ICE or DHS or any federal authority any kinds of new powers. Instead, what it did was instruct the Department of Education, the Health and Human Services Department, and the Department of Justice to speak to universities and to get them to do these types of harsh disciplinary practices against their own students, faculty, and staff who are engaged in basic human rights activism. So let me just give you one or two examples if I can. At NYU, we saw the administration ban professors from teaching in their own classrooms because of their engagement with nonviolent protests outside of the campus library. At Pittsburgh, University of Pittsburgh, we saw students and the Students for Justice in Palestine Club threatened with suspension for silently studying in their own library, wearing keffiyehs with signs saying Free Palestine. I mean, just imagine universities targeting their own students, their own faculty, their own staff for studying in a library. That's the kind of thing that we're seeing right now. They're going far beyond what they're required to by law, far beyond what they're required to by the threats of funding, to do what's being called anticipatory compliance, to be the harsh end of repression, in the vain hope that somehow, if they target Palestine enough, universities will be spared. But we have Project 2025, we have Project Esther, we know that they're coming after universities. And so what we at Jewish Voice for Peace are saying is that universities right now have to stand up for their core values, for their core educational mission, for the presence of international students, faculty, and staff on their campus, and push back hard against these attempts to get rid of dissent, to get rid of international students, to get rid of undocumented students on their campuses.
And you'd think that these kind of attacks would be considered outrageous and a violation of academic freedom. And then you have professors who are tenured, and the idea that you're going to tell them what they can and can't teach in their classroom, I think that would make people quite angry.
They certainly are attacks on core academic freedoms. And we're seeing groups like the American Association of University Professors really step up to the plate and push back hard against universities that are violating professors' rights to teach what they want to in the classroom. That's not even enough for so many of these universities. At Muhlenberg College, they fired Professor Maura Finkelstein for reposting the words of a Palestinian poet on her personal Instagram. I think it would be appropriate to teach the words of this Palestinian poet in the classroom themselves. They didn't even care what she did in the classroom. They fired her for personal Instagram posts that wasn't claiming to represent the university or anything. They really see any expression of Palestinian culture, of Palestinian solidarity, of Palestinian identity as somehow a threat and as something that they need to repress. I mean, to the point where the Health and Human Services Department launched investigations into four medical schools because students at the graduation of those medical schools were wearing keffiyehs and Palestinian flags on their graduation regalia. Simple expressions of Palestinian identity, of Palestinian culture, are being criminalized by this administration with the willing compliance of way too many university administrators who should know better and who need to stand up right now for what it means to be a university.
Are there universities around the country that are standing up to this or who are just not complying?
Far too few. I would point to Bowdoin and their reaction to the recent encampment there that students led. We don't fully know yet everything that's going to shake out there. There are still disciplinary procedures against eight of the students who were the center of this encampment. Their posture towards their students, certainly supported by quite a number of faculty and alumni who've been really key stepping up here, has been recognizing that they are fulfilling the aspirations of that particular institution towards working for citizenship and towards social justice. I am heartened quite a bit by the work of the AAUP and of faculty unions and graduate student unions who recognize that this is a threat to all of their members, that once you establish the precedent that politicians can tell you what you can and can't teach in your classroom, that's a threat to what it means to be a professor. That's a threat to what it means to be a university. So some of the best pushback I think we've seen has come from professional associations and from unions.
You mentioned the idea of setting a precedent, and I'm wondering if some of these universities are going to use the sort of playbook they're using to crack down on pro-Palestinian solidarity, if they're going to use that against other sorts of protests.
We don't have to guess at that. They already are. At the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign, there's been a student environmental group that has protested for 10 years asking their university to divest from fossil fuels. Personally, I think it's ridiculous that they've had to protest 10 years to tell their university to stop polluting their future, to make their planet livable for when they're adults. But, you know, this protest has been going on for 10 years every single week. And all of a sudden, UIUC, after they passed a series of draconian protest restrictions that were designed to repress Palestine solidarity movements, they've applied it to this group now, too. And so their environmental protest is now banned on campus, and students are being disciplined for engaging in the same protest that they've done for 10 years. So we know that this is not just about Palestine solidarity, that this is about coming after trans rights activists, queer rights activists, environmental activists, racial justice activists, reproductive rights activists, and anybody else who has a vision of social justice and inclusivity for the future.
Any push coming from state legislatures or Congress about this?
Yes. So we've seen Congress continue to try to crack down on campuses, to crack down on professors, to crack down on student protesters. Just the other day, we saw the Department of Education, Congressional Committee on Education issue a subpoena to Columbia asking for disciplinary records. We think it sets a really worrisome precedent of a fishing exercise. And so one of the things that we have asked universities to do is to destroy any disciplinary records that they have for student protesters, whether that's related to immigrant justice work, Palestine solidarity work, or any other social justice work. It's fully in the rights of a university to destroy this paperwork. We know that this is a basic measure that universities can do to increase the security of their students at a time when Congress and state legislators are going on fishing expeditions to try to hoover up these documents and find one sentence that they can take out of context in order to revoke funding for the university.
Any pushback the other way from, say, the Progressive Caucus in Congress or any progressives in state legislatures who want to put a stop to this kind of repression?
Yes, absolutely. We've been seeing more and more legislators, thanks to the really strong organizing across the board, recognize the threat of things like the International Holocaust Remembrance Association definition of anti-Semitism, a definition that intentionally conflates anti-Zionism and harsh criticism of Israeli human rights violations with anti-Semitism. Last year, we saw a number of congresspeople move from supporting the first reading of the Anti-Semitism Awareness Act, a bill that would have enshrined IHRA into U.S. law, move on the second vote after massive mobilizations, after massive call-ins, after they started to understand what this definition would mean for the ability of students, faculty, and staff to fulfill their basic functions. We saw a lot of them flip and start to oppose it. And so there's a lot to fight for here. And a lot of state legislatures and a lot of Congress and the Senate, there are movable decision makers who need to be made to understand the consequences of their actions right now and how something that is seemingly good, I mean, who doesn't oppose anti-Semitism, is being used to shut down the movement, being used to shut down basic activism and basic advocacy for human rights.
And anything else you want to add to what you said?
Yeah, you know, so much of this is being done in the name of Jewish safety. And it's laughable that this is coming out of people who not only do not have Jewish safety in mind themselves, but are themselves organized around the principles of Christian Zionism. So we're seeing this come from an administration that has Sebastian Gorka, who's linked to all sorts of Nazi organizations, Elon Musk, who gave the Nazi salute in front of the presidential seal twice, Darren Beatty, who is a frequent speaker at white supremacist events, Kash Patel as FBI director, who has a tendency to go on Holocaust denier podcasts. These are not people who have any right to talk about Jewish safety, and they're not people who are interested in Jewish safety. These are people who are interested in advancing their Christian Zionist project, who are advancing Christian nationalism and authoritarianism at home, and who are using the language of Jewish safety to advance their own far-right agendas. And so at this moment, it's really crucial for us to be pushing back and saying, not in our name, that we are here as Jews. We have poll after poll showing the majority of Jews do not support these policies, and that we need to be standing up opposing it. We need to be putting pressure on university administrators. We need to be organizing at every level across the board to push back on this authoritarian policy.
Do you see this as a kind of new McCarthyism or something worse?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a new McCarthyism. We've seen students expelled. We've seen faculty fired. We've seen contractors lose their jobs because they're not willing to toe the line, because they're willing to listen to experts in the field. They're willing to listen to Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch that declare that Israel is committing genocide in Gaza. They're willing to listen to Israeli human rights organizations like B'Tselem, Palestinian human rights organizations like Al-Haq that note the apartheid system in Israel. And because they're not willing to abandon the truth, they're losing out on their careers, on their ability to complete their education, their scholarship, their ability to earn a living, because they're not willing to lie, because they're not willing to abandon the truth. We know in the long run that these attempts to clamp down in the movement, these attempts at censorship, these attempts to combat people pursuing the good, the right, the social justice are going to fail. How long that long term is up to all of us. And so that's why we need to get together and organize.
That was Jonah Rubin from Jewish Voice for Peace speaking with KABU contributor David Rosenberg. You've been listening to KABU News In Depth. I'm Althea Billings. Thanks for being with us.
I'm Molly, and you're listening to KBOO Portland.
International Women's Day is Saturday, March 8th. Here at KABU, we have more than